planning, by the way.
As long as it goes, as long as it goes. And I can make it into several shows. My shows are about an hour. I can make it into several shows. I'm doing that with Pastor Arthur Pavlovsky. I interviewed him, and next week it's going to be Monday and Wednesday that I air it because my shows are Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So just depends
The
where.
longest I can go now, I've got a back-to-back schedule. I can't go over 2 o'clock. So, I mean, not 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock. I have my next appointment's at 2, and I got to get prepared for it. So, if you want, we could book another time if you don't think we've covered everything, but I can't go more than an hour right now.
No problem. No
Okay,
problem.
sounds
We'll make
good.
it work.
Perfect.
Well, I am so excited to introduce to you Grace Shara's father, Scott. You've seen her story on our program. We had Jeff Wagner on, who made a documentary over her life, and that was called Breaking the Oath. So welcome, Scott, to our program. Thank you for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate you having me on.
I'm very happy that you are going to share your story to the world, because people need to be held accountable for what happened. And from my understanding, you've been outspoken about the euthanasia that's happening in our medical system. Is that right, or do I have that wrong?
No, you have that right, because what happened after I came to grips with Grace being murdered, first she dies, and then I was not awake to any of this. And so I researched first to see what actually happened. Then I concluded she was murdered. So she died in October of 21. By April of 22, I had about 500 hours of research in her records. I knew they murdered her. Well, then that led down to genocide, eugenics, the parallel course with the Holocaust. And it's hard to even grasp. All of a sudden I'm getting woke up in real time, and what I uncovered through research, I've become a full-time advocate researcher. I'm zeroing in on 700 interviews now because I want to get this message out for the population. I mean, we're commanded to be watchmen on the wall, and that's what my responsibility is. So there is a euthanasia agenda that has been going on for decades. What COVID did, the COVID psyop, really woke people up if you have ears to hear. And that whole thing is a complete psyop. I mean, that psyop took my daughter's life. So they used my daughter's life to promote an agenda to euthanize us. And I can't tell enough people about that now. So yes, that is a big piece of it. Of course, we have the lawsuit going on. So that's another big piece that takes up time. But the lawsuit is also about exposing the agenda. It isn't about justice for Grace at this point, because this happened to 1.2 million Americans during the 39-month COVID era. So, Grace's case has become a lightning rod for all those people to get justice. And so that it occupies, it's so many hours a week, it's exhausting. Last night I was up till midnight reviewing. There was about 400 pages I needed to review for today, because we've got a major filing happening today that's confidential. But I needed to prepare for that. And I just got the documents last night at 5 o'clock. So I had to get all those reviewed last night. So, then you get try to get unwound when you go to bed. That's why
It's hard.
my words are even, because I just like, I'm used to getting a decent night's sleep. So I didn't get a decent night's sleep last night. And I was on the radio this morning at 7 o'clock on live radio. I need another cup of coffee right now.
No, I totally understand what you're going through, because there's many nights I can't sleep. I was watching a documentary called Take Care of Maya. It's on Netflix, and it's a similar situation, sort of kind of to yours, sort of kind of. They medically kidnap their daughter. So this nurse, the mom's a nurse. She knows how to take care of her daughter. She's medically trained. Her daughter had this rare disease. They found a doctor that treats this rare disease with ketamine. And they have to do a high dose of ketamine. It's then the only thing that this physician has found to work with this particular diagnosis. And it worked very well for her. She went into remission, started having problems after a year. And the parents took her emergency to a hospital. And then they kidnap the daughter. There's like this underlying medical kidnapping that's happening. Yeah. And that happened to adults during COVID, this medical kidnapping, which you know for a fact that because that happened to you. So like you, I can't sleep at night sometimes because now I'm awake to so many things that I never thought existed in our world. And the more I looked into COVID, I came up with the same conclusion as you. They took the play-by-play book of Hitler during World War II, and they're using it, and they've been using it for several years now. And come to find out, like the Nazis, we thought we defeated the Nazis. No, they came to the United States, and their belief systems and their culture has infiltrated our people of government. They call you and I Nazis. Well, that's just them gaslighting. It's really them who are the Nazis, because Nazism's never been dead. We didn't defeat it. It actually came to the United States. And so you like learn all these things that are happening. And it was heartbreaking because I had my best friend had metastatic breast cancer. She went in because she was having complications. They medically kidnapped her and they put her on the COVID ward because that PCR test, that faulty test, said she had COVID. No, she had cancer. So if you look at what that PCR test did, it was only a magnifying glass and it could pick up anything. And right. So that was probably picking up her cancer cells, not COVID. And they put her on the COVID floor and we couldn't see her. My dad had a transplant during this time, and we went to one of the best transplant hospitals, and I was taking him every week after the transplant to get his blood work. They should have picked up on an infection. It should have showed up because my dad ended up dying of an infection of his heart. So people got really medically stupid around COVID, I guess. I don't know, because innocent people didn't have to die. And then there was this nefarious side of it, which you have experienced. So why don't you share with us some of your story just to refresh my audience memory and what you've discovered, and tell us a little bit about this lawsuit.
Oh, that's so you just said a mouthful. So remember, my major degree is DAD. So that means as a DAD, I only can do one thing at a time. So it takes ladies to get me back on track. So I'm just going to handle one thing, and then you got to remind me what's the next thing. Because, you know, are you married?
Yes.
So how many times do you have to tell your husband the same thing before he does it? I mean, we got to do one thing at a time. That's how we're wired. All right. So I do want to say, though, relative to the World War II analogy, it's really even deeper than what people think. So certainly we are in a second Holocaust, but we are in a second Holocaust by design. The first Holocaust actually set up the second Holocaust. They didn't want it to end. Not only did Operation Paperclip happen, where we brought the enemy to our country, but there was another agenda happening. And that other agenda is the satanic agenda, preying EY on our desire for security and comfort. So what they did as a response to World War II, they set in charge the ultimate plan in Satan's playbook. They put together the United Nations, a satanic organization, to make sure that this doesn't happen again. So this is, we are getting the fruit of a nation and a world that doesn't want to turn to God. So they turn to men to solve a God problem, which United Nations is a group of men. And that's why we are in the problem we are in. And if we don't repent, I mean, God's timeline, nobody knows, only the Father knows. But, you know, based on what the facts and circumstances look like, we're in the days of Noah. And, you know, God is... he's not going to sit still forever. That is not what he's ever done in history. So anyway, that being said, a little bit about my buddy first. So Grace was 19 years old. She had Down syndrome. Her last day on earth was October 13th of 2021. And Grace was high functioning for at least three reasons that I can put my finger on. Number one, of course, is God made her that way. Number two is we never vaccinated her with anything. So she never was dumbed down by the vaccination culture that they want to us to believe in. And
right.
Number three, my wife knocked it out of the park with homeschooling. So Grace could read and write. She could drive a car. She deer hunted with me. She played violin. You know, she did everything. She was great. She was my best buddy. On top of that, she had a relationship with God that is second to none. She called me earthly dad. She called my wife earthly mom. And then what I miss, you know, because I have this goofy sense of humor, which I happen to like, but most people don't get it. But
I love, you know, goofy senses of humor.
I'm going to give you an example of how of what she was like. So I introduced her to this when she was about five. And so my wife says, you got to go to Walmart and get whatever. And, you know, I hate Walmart. I do not like that store. So even when I go, I own a business. So my vehicle's lettered. I park in a parking lot, you know, in the next county, so people don't know that I'm there. I don't want to even be associated with the store. So anyway, I said, hey, Grace, why don't you come along with Dad? So she jumps in, and so she's about five now. She's not really getting the humor, but I introduced it to her with this story. So I said, Grace, just so you know, everybody that shops at Walmart is a zombie. So we get inside Walmart, and she pokes a guy in the stomach. And she says, Dad, they're not zombies. So I thought, oh my gosh, she's going to get this stuff. So anyway, as you fast forward then to what was she like when she died? So we have in our area, there's a grocery store chain. It's a regional chain. So it's a multi-state chain called Piggly Wiggly. Okay. Have you ever heard of it before I mentioned it?
Yeah. Most people have heard of Piggly Wiggly. Yeah.
Okay. So Piggly Wiggly is their tagline. You know what their tagline is?
No.
Shop the pig.
Ah.
Right. So you can get that jingle in your head. Yeah, I'm not going to sing it because
you should totally sing it.
Well, I can't. People would stop the recording right now because they'd think, oh, I can't listen to this guy. I'm going to record the jingle. I had that thought this morning. I better record the jingle so I tell this story, people get it. So anyway, Grace and I are driving around the pickup. We got the radio on and we hear the Piggly Wiggly jingle. And Grace said, Dad, that doesn't make any sense. You can't shop a pig. First you shoot the pig, then you eat the pig, but you don't shop a pig. So, you know, I just enjoyed her so much.
Smart girl.
I miss her so much. I mean, I never miss somebody like this.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break.
When I invented MyPillow, my passion was to help each and every one of you. And 20 years later, all of your support is what keeps us going. Because of you, we've been able to create thousands of USA jobs and help millions get the best sleep ever. To thank you, my employees and I are bringing you a limited edition MyPillow. The Giza Elegance MyPillow is made with my patented adjustable fill, the most amazing cotton, and a 2-inch pipe gusset. It has 4 custom loft levels, machine washable and dryable, and you get my 60-day money-back guarantee and 10-year warranty.
Go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get your limited edition 20th anniversary MyPillow queen size. Retails for $69.98, now only $19.98. That's right, get a queen size MyPillow for only $19.98.
From all of us here at MyPillow,
thanks, America!
Hey, this is Dr. John Diamond from America Unhinged. You are watching The Amber May Show.
So many of us think that sleep is a luxury. Sleep is not a luxury. Sleep is a necessity. It's going to help you restore all your bodily functions, help your body recover, recoup. It's something that we need to function on a daily basis. We need to feel restful. And if you're not feeling restful because you're not getting a proper night's sleep, then I have something just for you. I just absolutely adore Dr. Stella. She comes out with some great supplements. And here's one of the newest ones she came out with, and it's Kobe Sleeps. So if you have trouble going to sleep at night and you want a more restful night's sleep, go to drstellamd.com, go to her supplement section and purchase this and use promo code AmberMay, one word, and you'll save some money there. Not only does it help promote a more restful night's sleep, it helps with stress and joint function. So if you have stress, you have joint function, you're also not getting a good restful night's sleep, you need to go to drstellamd.com, get these Kobe Sleep Bites right now, and save money by using promo code AmberMay.
are listening to the Anne Renee Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
So it's a painful thing, but you know, I have now a responsibility. So I retell the story, not because it's unique, but it's not uncommon. This happened to 1.2 million people during the COVID era. And I'm here to tell you, it happened to tens of millions before, and they conveniently call it medical malpractice, but it's medical murder. And medical murder is an acceptable crime in the United States. When somebody murders somebody on the street, they lock them up until the trial. Right now, you have doctors and nurses murdering people, and they keep murdering them. And why? Because nobody can take a case to trial. The reason they can't take a case to trial is the cabal set up a network of tort reform that precludes anybody from filing unless you've got the money. So this is, you wonder, why is Grace's case the first one with a trial? Well, the reason is it's the first case. Well, why is it even the first case? Well, because we have chosen to be obedient to God, and the door opened up to file. We have been blessed to have the money available to do it. So we're paying for the case to shed light on evil and blaze a trail for the rest of these victims. So that's what's going on. All right. So then what happened to Grace? Well, go ahead, Amber. You got a question?
Well, I was just going to say, I've been wondering how come we haven't had more lawsuits. Maybe I just don't know, because there was, like you said, I've interviewed several family members who saw their loved ones medically murdered, where they were literally kidnapped, medical kidnapping in the hospital, had no access to their loved ones, and their loved ones had to just watch their loved ones die. I don't know. I guess people didn't realize this was happening, and they were maybe too scared to bring people out of the hospital. Or I know some people were trying to work on getting their loved ones out, but by the time it got to that point, it was too late to get their loved ones out. And it breaks my heart, all these stories that I've been hearing. But you're the first one where it happened to a child. So far, it's happened to a spouse, a parent, something like that. This is the first story I've come across, and I know it's not the first story ever, but just the one in my circle of influence, my realm, where it was a parent-child relationship. And there's nothing worse to a parent than losing their kid. Like, there's nothing else worse than losing your child. I don't think of a more difficult pain than that. I think that's probably the ultimate pain that ever existed, is the loss of a child.
Yeah, I believe that. I mean, I'm there. Last night I bawled my eyes out reviewing the report that I needed to review for today, because it goes through the details of what they did to her. And
all for money too. I mean, this was money. Was, what does the Bible say? The love of money is the root of all evil. All of this propagated around money. If they weren't going to get paid, I'm sure more people would be living today. But there was so much money between getting the shot, between the COVID treatment, okay, at the hospitals. They weren't getting paid to heal you at the hospital. They were getting paid to kill you at the hospital.
That's correct.
They were getting paid to heal you, we would have got the ivermectin, we would have got the hydroxychloroquine, the vitamin D, the vitamin C, and then we would have been gone. We would have been out the door. And they would have got all this money to incentivize people to make sure people got well and over COVID. But that's not what happened. So that's where your story kind of begins.
Well, yeah. When do you ever incentivize death? I mean, wouldn't you incentivize health?
You would think so.
It makes absolutely no sense. And, you know, the propaganda machine is why most people bought into, we got to seclude your loved one. You know, we don't allow visitors on the COVID wing. It's like this whole thing was just like an attack on our country. And we've got to protect our citizens. And, you know, it was all a lie. The whole thing is a complete lie. And anyway, that's not what this show is about today. I'm going to just walk through a brief story of what happened to Grace so that people understand when we talk about the lawsuit, they understand the claims. So what happened was in October of 21, Grace got a cold. And as I look at it now, I see it as she may or may not have COVID. I don't believe COVID was a virus. I think it was a poison. So she had something and I had something too. So I know there was something going around. Was it bad flu? Was it, you know, a poison? You know, it seems like, you know, given some of the things that I've read, it's not only am I convinced it's a poison, but I'm even more convinced it was the flu, because how can there be no flu cases in the time when there's COVID cases, right? It doesn't make any sense. There's so many things that don't make sense, but, you know, ultimately we fell trapped to some of the propaganda. Obviously, you know, because of what I said about never vaccinating Grace, we did not fall trapped to the jab, because we already were awake to, you know, vaccines are not, we should never be vaccinating anybody for anything. Mm-hmm. It's that's another psyop. But and regardless,
Let me just break in there, because if people are questioning what you just said, I have a whole resource page dedicated to childhood vaccines. If you go to the AmberMayShow.com, click the resource tab, and on the resource tab, you're going to look for childhood vaccines. Go see what is posted on that site, the AmberMayShow.com resource tab, childhood vaccines. I think it's going to shock you. COVID woke me up to the lie and propaganda of vaccines. I was an avid vaxxer, and now I really, really stepped back and started examining what I so believed in. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you have. I mean, that's what I believe COVID was designed to do for anybody with ears to hear, is to wake us up to what's going on. I mean, think about the National Vaccine Child Safety Act passed in 1986. You know, that makes no sense. But that tort reform, that was the largest tort reform that was ever passed in our country. That tort reform has trickled down to why people can't sue doctors and nurses now. So, you know, you think about in the real world, I own a business. In the real world, as a business owner, when I screw up, I have to make it right. But now you have big pharma can produce anything they want with no consequences. I mean, that should be a flag to anybody. So you don't even have to research. You think, well, that doesn't make sense. Why wouldn't they have consequences if they kill my son or daughter with their product? Why don't they have consequences? Mm-hmm. You know, it was all part of, you know, there's some big lies that have been sown by Satan, and that's a subset of one of the big lies. So the lie that's been sown by Satan, so people can connect the dots, is that we have a planet that has limited resources. And because of that situation, we've got to manage the climate and we've got to manage the population. So that's what's being implemented. So when you see vaccines underneath that umbrella, you see, oh my gosh, Satan is playing a long game. It's not about what happens in a year or two. It's in, you know, he's measuring time the same way God is measuring time. And Satan knows the Bible better than any man who's ever walked the earth other than Jesus Christ. So right. He knows his time is short. Mm-hmm. So he's been playing the long game for 6,000 years now. All right. So he's had a long time to set this up. And so that 1986 act was just another cog in this wheel that is setting up the big agenda. So what were we talking about? No, we're talking about Grace's story. So
yeah.
Anyway, we fell trapped to the propaganda, thinking that this really was a virus. This is serious. You know, we got to take this serious. So we had all the FLCCC protocol. So we got Grace on it right away, and we just thought we'd walk through it. I really didn't expect any problems, and we would have walked through it if we weren't trapped by the fear that was associated with the FLCCC protocol, which it said, if your oxygen saturation drops below 94%, admit yourself to the hospital. Well, on October 6th, Grace dropped to 88%. We perceived that as an emergency. That's where I say we bought into some of the propaganda, and ultimately, your secret weapon against the propaganda is God did not give you a spirit of fear. So every time you take an action on the fear, or you think, I got to do this based on fear, if you go 180 degrees opposite, you're in God's will. And I was not in God's will. Grace died because I was not in God's will. Period. End of story. That does not excuse what the doctors and nurses did to her. And I've repented for that. So please don't put in your comments, you know, Scott, get over it. I share it because I don't want anybody else to lose their best buddy. So it's really important. All right. So now we are in the emergency room. The emergency room physician says, let's check Grace into the hospital for 3-4 days, put her on oxygen and a steroid, and she'll be fine. I thought, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I didn't obviously know hospitals were at this point hired as killers. I didn't have any idea of this.
I don't think anyone did. I know I didn't at first. But then when they locked up my best friend and she had little children at home, I reached out to all my state legislators to try and see from county to state to see if anyone could help me get access to her. And when I went to try and go visit her and they stopped me and I couldn't even put my toe in the door to go give her a gift basket, I'm like, this is like prison.
Yes.
I can't even go see my friend to give her a basket. And she's dying in the hospital from metastatic breast cancer. All my spidey senses went up so bad. I'm like, this is a prison. This is not a hospital.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, praise God, I was able to be there. So, you know, Grace's story is unique for a number of reasons. One is she was never on remdesivir, we never approved a ventilator.
Whoa.
We were in the room other than 47 hours. I was taken out by an armed guard on October 10th. And then we had to hire an attorney to get my daughter Jessica in as a replacement advocate. And my wife Cindy could not do it at the time because she had COVID. So we had advocacy the entire 7 days other than 47 hours. Well, during that 47 hours, unbeknownst to us, until, of course, you get the records and we prepare for the legal case. I mean, we've got this buttoned up now. We know what happened to her. They started her on a sedation med called Presidex on October 9th. I got taken out by the armed guard on the 10th. During that 47 hours, they increased the sedation med 6 different times. So instead of taking care of Grace, they sedated her. That med is only supposed to be used for 24 hours max. If you use it for more than 24 hours, the package insert says directly it causes acute respiratory failure, which is the first cause of death listed on Grace's death certificate. The second cause of death listed is COVID-19 pneumonia, which is a complete lie. What they did is they took Presidex then. On Grace's last day, we had a phone call with the doctor, and he's telling us how great of a day Grace had the day before, which we knew because Jessica was there. And he said, we should work on nutrition. And, you know, we'll get Grace out of bed today and, you know, all these positive things. Well, while we were on the phone with him, he had the nurse increase the Presidex to the maximum allowable dose. Simultaneous with hanging up the phone, he put an illegal do not resuscitate order on her. You know, so then they still didn't kill her at that time. I think the DNR was put on her because they thought the Presidex was going to kill her, but it didn't. So they combined it with lorazepam and morphine. And that's
lorazepam, I think, is a breast suppressant, right?
It's a, I could say this if I got a good night's sleep. It's a, it's a benzo is the short. Benzodiazepine, I think it is. I'm not a doctor or nurse.
Repress breathing? I'm not sure. But yeah,
it all suppresses breathing. It's insane. So, but that was their goal. Okay, so this is what clued me into the euthanasia agenda, because when I saw the med combinations, I thought, this is exactly what they give people in hospice care in their last hour of life. So they added to the Presidex lorazepam and morphine. And they did that in a 29-minute window, and after that last dose of morphine, Grace was dead about an hour later. You know, so when that's truly the second cause of death, and the third cause of death is they would not revive her. So now Jessica at this point is panicking. She got Cindy and I on a FaceTime call, and we're all screaming for the nurses to come in. Jessica had already been trying for an hour to get the nurses in. They wouldn't come in. they just said, that's, you know, she was saying, take a temperature, Grace is getting cold. And the head nurse said, well, that's normal, just put a blanket over. And so when Jessica called us, we're all screaming to save our daughter. And they holler back, wouldn't even come in the room. They holler back, she's DNR. And that's the first we had any clue. So we holler back, she's not DNR, save our daughter. And they would not come in the room. So, I mean, that's truly the third cause of death. So anyway, all of these things get wrapped up into a lawsuit, of course. But, you know, if you want to ask any questions about Grace's last day or her stay in the hospital, go ahead. And then we can talk about the lawsuit.
No, I would love you to go into that detail of her last day.
Well, you know, it's, you know, the phone call with the doctor is only one piece of it. You know, so I mentioned about how during the call they increased Precedex to the maximum allowable dose. Well, what's interesting is that they set this up. And I want to just give one more detail so people see how nefarious these hospitals are. So when I was in the room with Grace, I took a shower in the room. Okay. They told me I couldn't leave the room. I take a shower in the room. It was all fine. Now my daughter Jessica is in the room. And on the morning of Grace's last day, she said to the 14-year ICU nurse, 14 years of experience, this lady was, I think, on purpose, the nurse taking care of Grace. So she said to her name is Holly McGinnis. She said to Holly, I'm going to take a shower. And Holly was insistent, you cannot take a shower in the room. And Jessica said, well, what's the reason? When my dad was in the room, he could take a shower here. And she said, I don't care what we did for your dad. You can't. If you're going to take a shower, you need to leave. So Jessica's thinking she's going to be there for, a few days at least. So, okay, I'm just going to do that. But, you know, I'm going to make sure Grace is okay with it. So Grace is a little groggy. She's getting up. But Grace was cognitive. So, I mean, she could easily... You know, Jessica asked her, Grace, is it okay if I go home and take a shower? And Grace nods, yeah, that's okay, Jess. So, I mean, Jess, of course, wouldn't have left if she thought Grace was fine. During that little over an hour that Jess was gone, they strapped Grace down to the bed and made her poop in the bed. When Jessica got back, she overheard the doctors and nurses say the family's not going to like this. So she said, what are they going to like? And they explained they strapped Grace down to the bed while she was gone. And so she said, what's the reason? And they said, she wanted to go get out of bed to go to the bathroom. Remember what I just said earlier, the doctor said, let's get Grace out of bed today. And here he's lying, lied to us, because as he's saying that, they had already strapped Grace down to the bed. Why wouldn't they have gotten her out of the bed? I mean, think that through. I mean, it's hurtful to think what they did to my little buddy. Anyway, these are the things that families don't know happen to their loved ones, because there's three things that happened with COVID that facilitated this agenda. Number one is the shroud of secrecy. So we are sharing this story because we saw it, you know, so we know what happened. It's not a guess. So the shroud of secrecy, families don't know. So number two is the PREP Act immunity. So they have immunity from liability if they excuse their behavior under COVID. I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, how is that possible? And the third one we've already talked about, which is the bonus payments for murdering people. So that three-legged stool facilitated an agenda to mass murder people that is second to none. And to give you a perspective of, so I already said 1.2 million people were murdered this way in the 39-month COVID era. We are number one. The United States is number one of all 200 countries. Number two is India at 531,000. And their population is four times that of the United States. So that gives you a clue as to how much our country is leading the charge to implement a satanic agenda.
Well, that goes along with what God told me a long time ago. If anyone's listened to my show, they already know the story, but in Daniel chapter 10, I was reading that a long time ago in early 2000s, and in the story, Daniel asked God to dispatch a message, and God immediately dispatched an angel, And in the heavenly realms, the prince of Persia came and was stopping the angel from delivering a message, and they were battling for 10 days. And then God sent Michael, the archangel, to come down and fight the battle so that he can release the message to Daniel. And as I'm reading that, God told me the prince of Persia is over your nation. So this big, gigantic, powerful, dark angel, Satan, has been controlling our nation for years, he told me. But, you know, in just that one sentence, like when you get a download from God, like you get a, you understand what he's saying.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, God's angel was having a really hard time because he wouldn't, it was a very powerful demonic force and he couldn't break free. That's why God had to send Michael in so that Michael could step in and fight the battle to release the message. So if you think about how powerful this angel, this dark force is, it makes a lot of sense of everything you're saying right now. And wow. When I got that message, I had a sense that God was telling me there's going to be an end to his reign. I didn't know when the end would come, but the end, I think, is drawing closer because I think God's in a point of exposing stuff right now. He's exposing child trafficking. He's exposing medical kidnapping. He's exposing all kinds of things, the pharmaceutical, the dark end of pharmaceuticals. Do I believe that there is some life-saving medicines? Absolutely. But there is also a dark side of pharmacy. There was a takeover of the medical system with Rockefeller. Right. So it goes on and on and on. And God is finally taking this remnant and he is telling stories. And I want to get to the religious side for you, because oftentimes when something tragic comes in and they kill, and especially when it has involving your child, it can take you away from God 100%. I interviewed Pastor Arthur Pulaski, and him and I, you won't hear it in the interview, but if you watch any of his videos, he's done sermons on it and he's talked about how he came from a life of crime in Poland under the Iron Curtain. He came to a new country, had a business. God really got a hold of him. And what happened was he was just a churchgoer. He just a bench warmer, just sitting in a seat, not really having a deep relationship with God until there was a come to Jesus moment when his baby had some medical disruptions from after birth or whatever. And it was life-threatening. And God used that moment to really get a hold of this pastor. I've had multiple miscarriages. I don't know what it's like to bury a child, but I know what it's like to lose a child. I know there's a difference because I've never named my kid. I've never held my child. I've never had to bury my child, but my body changed and I could feel my body. I could feel the baby. So when you tell your story, sir, it makes a difference for me. And I turned away from God, even though I've known him my whole life, after my third miscarriage, because it ruptured my fallopian tube, already had trouble having children, and I hated God so much. Eventually, God talked to me one night after years and years, like not years and years and years, but years have gone by, a few years at least. And God talked to me and it healed the pain that was inside. Now, there's always a level of pain there, but not to the degree where I hated him so much. I know my kids are in a better place. They never had to experience the hurt of this world. They were loved from the moment they were conceived because right. God took them right away. So tell me your story about, you talk about God. How can you still love God even though your child is gone?
Yeah, that's really a great question. There's at least two different tentacles with that answer. You know, praise God, I was grounded beforehand. And so I know God is sovereign. And I know God did not cause Grace's death. You know, he allowed it because God could have stepped in. There's no question about that. I mean, he's all powerful, all knowing, you know, so he could have done it, but he's sovereign. So I was able to rest in that fairly quickly. It took me a while only because 3 days after Grace died, I got incredibly sick. I had to go to the hospital myself. I was substantially worse than Grace. I would say at least 10 times worse than Grace. I just about died on October 16th. And, you know, that hospital turned me around in 24 hours. I believe I was taken to that specific hospital on purpose by God so I could objectively tell this story. So while I was in the hospital, it gave me time to reflect. I started doing some writing about what happened. I already started transcribing my notes while I was in the hospital with Grace before she died, thinking, you know, I want to share this information that I learned about hospitals. I never thought Grace was going to die. I just was keeping notes while I was there, and I started transcribing those notes while I was, you know, the very next day. I got kicked out on October 10th. I started transcribing the notes on the 11th on my computer. And, you know, ultimately, while I was sitting in that hospital from the 16th through the 19th of October, so for 4 days, you know, I had a lot of time to be one-on-one with God, with processing things. I started writing and, you know, to realize, okay, well, I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea, but I know God has a purpose. And then I'm just going to close up on that loop because I want to go into even a more important loop. So when I finally got home, and, you know, it took me about a week just to be able to go up the stairs. I was on full oxygen. I had lost a lot of weight. I was having a hard time doing anything. Then all of a sudden I started getting my appetite back. My wife was doing a fantastic job taking care of me. And then one day we said to each other, you know, what are we going to do? You know, our life is gone. So we thought, well, let's set up a charitable foundation. We'll be able to help other kids with this disabilities. And so we did set that up. We have only given one grant, because what happened next is we filed a complaint against the doctor and the hospital with the state agency that regulates them. And the reason we did is, even before that, I had sent a letter via email to the CEO and the doctor who murdered Grace, the CEO of the hospital, asking for a meeting. At this point, I didn't think it was murder. I just wanted to share the documentation we had so that they could see it, repent, and make sure it doesn't happen to anybody else. So that was on November 8th. Remember, Grace died October 31st. Well, then they rejected even have a meeting. So on December 2nd, we received that rejection. So then I filed complaints, and we got letters back in January from the two state departments doing the investigations, and they did sham investigations. They said the hospital and the doctor did nothing wrong. So I thought, oh my gosh, they're all in on it. This is probably the first day I started to wake up. So then I also had, on December 2nd, I sent a couple of paragraph summary of what happened to Grace to Newsmax and Fox. To my shock, somebody, a producer from Newsmax, called me and said, you want to be on national TV? I said, no, but I need to be. I got to tell the story. So December 13th of 2021, I was on national TV. Well, then that led to a number of different things. And all of a sudden, we were listening to Jan Markell on a Saturday morning in the kitchen on the radio. And she said, before we go to break, I want to share this story of a dad who lost his daughter. And all of a sudden, she plays the Newsmax clip. We had no idea. And so my wife and I then prayed about it and thought, you know, is this God telling us to jump in? And so then we thought, yeah, I mean, okay, so we jumped in with both feet and never looked back. We just said, okay, you know, we don't need to pray about this anymore. Whatever doors you open up, we'll walk through. And if you close doors, we won't walk through those. And, you know, ultimately, that's why we filed the lawsuit. So then we got to start thinking, is Grace going to be the one? Is she the one that is going to bring this whole house of cards down? You know, this, you know, I know it sounds too crazy to even, you know, I get it. It sounds crazy. I know.
But I don't think it does. Look at the people in the Bible. Look, it took one person to bring down things. David took down Goliath. Gideon took down with 300 men the Midianite army. I mean, there's just on and on stories, on and on and on. Moses went before Pharaoh.
That's actually quite encouraging that you bring it up. It's humbling. I mean, I don't know where this is going, but I'm not, I'm certainly all in. You know, I have thought, you know, I'm on the front lines. I mean, for some reason, God's protecting me. Well, I mean, I know why he's protecting me, because if I'm on the front lines, that's his job, right? And, you know, so, you know, I've been asked on interviews, do you want to do a suicide statement? You know, this is how dumb I was. I was like, what are you talking about? I don't even know what you're talking about. Well, they said, well, people like you tend to die of suicide, right? And so I said, oh, sure, I'll make that statement, after they connected the dots with me. So, you know, we're on the front lines. I believe God is behind this. What happens? I mean, I don't know what his will is, but I just know we're just supposed to be walking in faith. So then, so that's the one tangent. The other tangent is maybe more important, because people don't understand what forgiveness is. And so, you know, how do you forgive somebody who murdered your daughter?
Right.
And the answer is you can't.
You can't.
It's impossible.
Right.
So what I think the real miracle is not the fact that we filed a lawsuit. You know, of course, that's a miracle in and of itself. But the real miracle is, without even asking, while I was in that hospital room, God gave me the spirit of forgiveness. And that is the gospel. The things that we can't do, that's what he does. If we could forgive somebody who murdered if I could forgive the man and woman who murdered my daughter by myself, I don't need God.
Right.
But he did it. Well,
that's what God did. God did that to us. He forgave us because mankind murdered his one and only son on the cross. And he forgave us of that. So we should be able to forgive, and you're right, we can't do it in and of itself.
Well, the logic, you know, you just explained the logic of it. Yes, of course, that makes, I can tell that over and over to 1,000 widows, but they still aren't forgiving, because you can't do it. You cannot, because the logic is there. You know, look at the parable of the unmerciful servant. I mean, it's laid right out. I mean, how can you not forgive when you've been forgiven more, right? Yes,
right.
But that still doesn't make it happen.
Right.
God has to be the one to make it happen. Right. And, absolutely. You know, so, you know, I think about it, you know, if I'm just a angry dad, just, you know, I want to punch everybody and shoot everybody. I mean, I don't think the story goes very well then. So he had to do it. If he was going to use me, he had to make sure that I just don't have a bunch of anger.
Right. Now tell us about the miracle of this lawsuit.
Okay. So I'm going to set this up by having people understand that it is near impossible to file a lawsuit. And it's near impossible because our friends, the Republicans, set up a situation called tort reform. And they did this because they wanted to fill their coffers with big corporate donors. So we already talked about the National Vaccine Safety Act or Child Safety Act. I mean, that's tort reform. So now pharmaceutical companies don't have any liability when they kill you. All right. So that doesn't make any sense. Oh, wow. You have that up on your screen. That's perfect. Yeah, this is scary stuff. And even what's more scary is if you laid out the 70, is it 72 or 75 doses now that, okay, yeah. if those were laid out, if the parent had informed consent, okay, so let's just play informed consent in real time. If they laid out 72 syringes on a table and now your one-year-old is there and say, okay, we're gonna do these one at a time. No parent would ever do it. Right. But they combine them, you know, just all part of the lie. Anyway.
So the miracle is.
Okay. So how did they pull off tort reform? How did these, you know, Newt Gingrich in the contract with America in 1994 pulled off tort reform? And it was going away before that, but on a massive scale, he pulled it off. Well, what's the reason? Stella Liebeck is the reason. Stella Liebeck is the 79-year-old lady who spilled coffee on her lap in 1992 and sued McDonald's. Well, that story they used as propaganda, and if you look it up, we're not going to go through the details now, but one of the attorneys on the legal team said, Scott, look up this case so you understand and you can frame your case and realize how rare it is to file. So what happened was, is the Republicans pounced on that, right? Never let a crisis go to waste, that mentality. So they pounced on that, bought all the media, and sold it to the whole population that this can happen. I mean, coffee is going to cost $10 a cup if we let these lawsuits go, right? So anyway, it was a complete lie, a complete lie. Stella Liebeck did sue McDonald's, and she won. Everything after that is a lie. And how the lawsuit even happened is a lie, because they don't tell you that. They just said this woman got $2.9 million. That's a complete lie. It's all propaganda. So anyway, that trickles down then to tort reform in as it relates to doctors. So when I go through the details of this case, you're going to see it in black and white, not physical. Well, I can show my screen, can't I? So in the upper right-hand corner, you see that this was filed May 15th of 23. So that date, so people get a perspective, we filed our lawsuit on April 11th. We filed against Ascension Hospital System, 5 doctors and 2 nurses. That's an extraordinary way to file. Most people just file against the hospital because they're the ones who have the money. But we filed against the doctors and nurses also because they killed Grace. And they need to be held to account. You cannot use following orders as an excuse to kill somebody. So that's
Isn't that the Nuremberg Code?
That's correct. Good job. So what is timestamped here is a partial motion to dismiss. So this partial motion to dismiss, so you see the title, brief of defendant. So this is one of the MDs. So all the defendants jumped on this. It jumped on this brief. So now the judge scheduled a hearing 2 weeks ago today, July 14th, to hear this motion for partial dismissal. So what were they trying to dismiss? Well, they're trying to dismiss 2 pieces of our claim. And one is the illegal DNR. So what we did is in our claim, we have what's called a declaratory judgment for the illegal DNR. And they wanted to dismiss that. So I'm going to read the language. I'm going to show it on the screen and read the language. So you're sitting down, right?
Yep.
Because this is in the category. It's like, are you? So here it is in yellow. This is the reason they gave why the judge should dismiss our claim. The DNR order should be dismissed because A, the issue is not ripe for adjudication, and or B, the issue is moot because Grace Shira, the subject of the order, is deceased.
Yeah, because there was no DNR. Or because there was a DNR. Hello.
Because there
Hello?
Was a DNR. Right.
That's so what I'm saying. Because there was a DNR, she is deceased. Yeah. Thank you. Like, oh, I'm joking right now. But, like, this is terrible.
Right. This is the equivalent of, you know, the wife has a
circulatory argument. This is
right. It's a circulatory argument. The wife has a life insurance policy on the husband. She kills the husband and now wants the life insurance, right? Yes. No, you can't. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
All right. So that was the first one. So the second one is even more shocking, and it's why I told you the story about Stella Liebeck. So what they wanted to do is, you see right above here, state chapter 655. So that Wisconsin state statute is what's called the medical malpractice statute. And that's where the liability limitations for doctors are written into that chapter of Wisconsin state statutes. So I'm going to scroll down and show you what they tried to do. So I'll set this up before I read this. What they wanted to do is take our battery claim, which is an intentional tort. We're saying they intended this because of lack of informed consent. You know, Grace didn't die by accident. Medical malpractice is kind of like, oh boy, sorry this happened. It was an accident. We're saying it wasn't an accident. And that's a separate claim. Of course, they don't want that claim heard because, one, for one, it has punitive damages associated with it. And number two, of course, there's no liability protection, whereas 655 gives an overall liability protection for the doctors. This is where tort reform came in. So this is what they wrote. The legislature's purpose in enacting a statutory scheme. So you just think they used actually the word scheme to govern claims for damages arising out of alleged medical negligence was to encourage healthcare providers to remain in Wisconsin by imposing certain limits on the causes of action that a patient or her family member can pursue and the types and amount of damages that can be recovered. Just wrap your head around that. For a doctor to practice in your state, they have to have liability protection.
Correct.
How about if they just, why don't not just be a good doctor?
I work in the financial world and I have to have liability coverage too. Because if I leave out a piece of information, not realizing I did it on purpose, like I just forgot to tell you, and it comes back to bite you. I didn't do it out of like spite. I did it just out of, I just forgot to say it. And so that I have to get that. So I'm guessing the doctors have to do that too, because they can't heal everybody all the time. I agree with what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but there are times and places where like things happen beyond their control. So that's where that comes into play.
Well, it's a little bit different, and you actually gave the difference, is that you own a business, I own a business. We have to buy our own insurance and then we choose the limits.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything that would happen over those limits, we're self-insuring.
Correct.
Okay. We don't have a state statute.
That's true.
Right. That's what the issue is. They have a state statute that says the maximum payout in a death is $750,000. Period.
Okay, now I understand what you're saying. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
So that's the problem with tort reform, is it is only applies to the big donors, the big lobbies. It doesn't apply to little business owners like you and I. They want to put us out of business.
Oh, true, for sure. So I know your time is limited because you have a lot of media you're doing, and I'm just so grateful for you giving time today. So to wrap up the lawsuit, what's like the highlights, the most important things we need to know?
Yep, about most lawsuit? Important. Yeah. So most important, you know, for need to know is realize if you're chasing a lawsuit right now, meaning you're trying to get an attorney. People are throwing the attorneys under the bus. I talked to 100 attorneys. Nobody will take it on. Well, the reason they don't take it on is because there's no money in these cases. Okay. So $750,000 sounds like a lot of money, but the reality is it's hardly anything because the attorney can only take 1/3, which is $250,000. And that also sounds like a lot of money, but these cases are near impossible to win. We're going up against Ascension Hospital System. You mentioned David and Goliath before. They have $30 billion in cash. I talked with the best medical malpractice attorney in Wisconsin. I never thought we'd file a suit, but God opened the door. He told me, Scott, even in slam dunk cases like this appears to be, you only have a 1 in 10 chance of winning. And I said, how is that possible? He said, I represented a family. He told me this story. I represented a family where the husband died. The doctor sewed up a sponge inside of him, which causes death. And we lost. I said, how? How could you lose? He said, I brought in 10 experts and they brought in 100. They circle the wagons around their own. The out-of-pocket cost for a lawsuit like this, for just for the experts, is about $100,000. So if you take those numbers, I said, 750 at 1/3 for the attorneys is 250 at 10% is only 25,000. So is an attorney going to roll the dice for 25 grand? Doesn't make any sense. So you've got to have your own.
That's the same thing with the CPS illegal kidnapping of children. It's hard for the parents to fight back because it's just too much money to fight back against the big government. So it's the same exact situation.
And you know, the other thing I would tell people in closing is that it's imperative that you recognize hospitals have become the new killing fields. And once you recognize that, you will do something. And
I want to thank you, Scott. I know you got to jump and go on and other media. So thank you, Scott, so much for coming on your show today, sharing your story, sharing what God's doing in your family. I appreciate you very much.